This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Researchers say Twitter missed dozens of images of child sexual abuse on its platform. The company says it's improved its detection system, but challenges remain for social media platforms trying to root out such content.
Twitter is by no means the only tech company to have faced issues like this before. It's a big challenge for internet companies to block this kind of material. And of course, bad actors can evolve their methods.
Plus, why American Airlines wants to reinvent business travel and what it means for your airfare this summer. And Apple reveals its first major new product in a decade. It's Monday, June 5th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Apple had some big news at its Worldwide Developers Conference today, announcing its first major new product in a decade. It's called the Vision Pro headset, and CEO Tim Cook says it's the first to introduce users to spatial computing. It works by allowing users to experience virtual reality and digital apps with the real world simultaneously. Our personal tech news editor, Shara Tibkin, says it's huge news for Apple.
Tim Cook has been talking about augmented reality for years and how he really sees an opportunity for us to kind of overlay the virtual world on top of the real world. And what Apple really did during its keynote today was show different ways that we could do this, whether it's for work or for personal, capturing kind of these 3D memory recordings of your kids, you know, really trying to find ways that we can just be present in the world, but also augment it. And for, you know, for the rest of the industry, people have been kind of waiting for Apple to do this for a very long time. It almost has kind of felt like we've been in this sort of holding pattern. You know, other companies have been really innovating. We've seen Meta, other companies kind of get involved with this, but it's kind of been everyone waiting to see what Apple's going to do.
You can hear more about Apple's conference on tomorrow's episode of our Tech News Briefing podcast. The rapid growth of artificial intelligence is making it easier to generate sophisticated videos and images, posing a major threat to political campaigns as 2024 contests get underway. Our reporter Ryan Tracy says we're already seeing the technology being deployed politically.
One prominent example that occurred recently was the Republican National Committee putting out a video that depicted a sort of dystopia that they were saying would occur if President Biden were reelected. So China was invading Taiwan. There were migrants surging across the U.S.-Mexico border. And they were using this to make their case for a Republican candidate in 2024.
Although we have seen this before, Ryan says that this time it's different.
What's changed is that the ability to create it has become much, much easier. You know, we've seen the rollout of these generative AI systems like ChatGPT, which generates text, but there's also systems that make photos and videos and music, and they're all being put in the hands of millions of users, and the quality is improving as well. They're becoming more realistic, and even to experts, becoming harder to detect. And so that's why we're seeing what we think is the beginning of the proliferation of this kind of synthetic media in the context of an election.
Democratic and Republican consultants say they're also testing AI and viral chatbot ChatGPT for drafting speeches, fundraising emails and texts, and building voter files. Business travel has long made up a large portion of airline profits. But that changed during the pandemic, and airlines are still struggling to make up that business, with more workers on remote or hybrid schedules. American Airlines, which has more flights than any other U.S. airline, is trying to reinvent business travel. To talk about how the company's doing that and what it could mean for the price of tickets is Wall Street Journal airlines and air travel reporter Allison Sider. Allison, the latest plan abandons the long-standard practice of contracting with companies and offering them perks and relies instead on American Airlines' own network. Can you talk us through how that sort of flips the old process around?
Yeah, I mean, the way this has always worked for a lot of companies anyway was that they might have a special deal with the airline and, you know, the company would hit a certain booking target or commit a certain level of market share to this airline and in exchange will get a discounted fares for all the travelers at our company. And, you know, that was sort of the most attractive way for a big company who has lots of people on the road all the time to do business with the airline. And yeah, I think what American is saying is, especially coming out of the pandemic, travel patterns have changed a lot. People don't travel the same way they used to the same places they used to. They're not doing all these single day meeting trips. And they're just seeing that they don't think a lot of those deals really still make sense. That, I mean, I think the numbers they've said are over 60% of their corporate contracts, like they're just not hitting those volume numbers or those market share goals. And I think, you know, they're sort of betting, like, we American have this huge network, flights all over the place. So people are going to fly American because it takes them where they want to go. So, you know, why do we need to offer all these perks and status and spend all this effort and money kind of luring these companies when we have a product we think that travelers want?
Is this a risky move? What do analysts think about this?
Yeah, I think there are some risks. You know, some of the analysts I've talked to have said maybe what American is seeing right now is not going to be how things are for the long term. You know, what American is seeing right now is people really want to travel for leisure. People are combining business and leisure and sort of booking their own trips and making their own arrangements. Maybe in a year, more people are back in the office, things kind of snap back more like they were at the start of the pandemic. And then, you know, American has let go a huge chunk of its sales staff. You know, it's really not investing in a lot of those relationships in the same way. And then you might have Delta and United and maybe even Southwest kind of swooping in and capturing some of those customers and picking up some market share. So that is one of the big risks. At the same time, if this works for American, they could save a lot of money, you know, save all these really high distribution costs that they incur for some of these business bookings. And if American doesn't take a big hit, other airlines might look at that and say, yeah, why are we spending all this money on these relationships? Maybe we should do this.
Allison, I think anyone who's tried to plan a summer vacation might have had a little sticker shock this season. What does all of this mean for non-business customers?
Yeah, I mean, the flights are just very full. There's a huge appetite for travel. And I think as long as that's the case, I mean, the fares are going to be high. You know, one of the factors driving American strategy is that back pre-pandemic, they always sort of thought of it as there's leisure travelers and they're very price conscious and bargain minded and they just want the cheapest fare, and there's business travelers and they're willing to pay whatever because their company is paying for it. And I think coming out of the pandemic, they've seen, you know what? Leisure travelers are willing to pay a lot of money. Like, people will book themselves up into, you know, premium economy or business class and spend their own money just to have a nicer experience. So I think as long as that demand remains high, we'll see these fares remain elevated.
That's Wall Street Journal airlines and air travel reporter Allison Sider. Coming up, researchers say Twitter missed images of child sexual abuse on its platform. While the company says it's since improved its detection system, eliminating such content remains a challenge across social media platforms. More after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Researchers at Stanford University say Twitter missed dozens of known images of child sexual abuse being posted on its platform in recent months. The researchers from the Stanford Internet Observatory said they told the platform about their findings and that the problem appeared to have been resolved in May. Joining me now with more on her exclusive report is Wall Street Journal Twitter reporter Alexa Course. Alexa, let's start with the basics. How did Twitter miss this, according to researchers, and how did the company ultimately resolve it?
We actually don't know exactly how Twitter missed this problem, and Twitter didn't respond to a request for comment from the Wall Street Journal or share details. But maybe let's back up for a second and explain how researchers found out about this issue. A group of researchers at Stanford have been investigating child safety issues on several platforms. And one thing they do when they investigate this issue is they don't want to accidentally see these awful images. So they said they set up a system to automatically detect unique signatures of these images, and their system started detecting dozens of hits from posts that were on Twitter.
This has been an ongoing challenge for Twitter and other platforms. Is Twitter still vulnerable to missing these types of things? What challenges does it still face in eliminating this content?
Right. I mean, one thing we say in the story is that Twitter is by no means the only tech company to have faced issues like this before. It's a big challenge for internet companies to block this kind of material. And of course, bad actors can evolve their methods. Twitter in particular, the researchers said in their report, faces a challenge here because its policies do allow some adult nudity. So the researchers pointed out that makes it a bit more complicated for Twitter to figure out what's okay, you know, what involves consenting adults and what's not okay. Twitter, of course, prohibits material that features or promotes child sexual exploitation.
Isn't this something Elon Musk prioritized when he took over Twitter?
Right. When Musk acquired Twitter in late October, he personally put a spotlight on this issue. He said that removing this kind of material would be Twitter's number one priority and, quote, will forever be our top priority.
How are other social media platforms dealing with this challenge?
So like the researchers noted in their report and we noted in our story, this has long been a problem for social media companies. One thing we noted in the story is that the researchers said they were using a technology called PhotoDNA. That technology creates a unique digital signature, a hash of an image, and platforms can use that to check the hashes of images users are posting. This technology has been around for years. It's been used by tech companies and law enforcement, and it's one way to combat this issue.
Alexa, Twitter has been in the news a lot in recent days. Just last week, we learned about the recent exit of two Twitter executives who dealt with content moderation. Are these stories connected in any way?
Well, it's certainly been a tumultuous period for Twitter. We don't have any reporting directly tying these two things. The exits happened last week. According to our reporting, the exits of those two executives came in part because of a controversy over Twitter's handling of a movie about gender issues. And that was according to one of the executives and other people familiar with the matter.
And we've also learned that Linda Yaccarino is expected to start her role earlier than previously planned. What can you tell us about that?
We reported over the weekend that Twitter's new CEO is expected to start today. And I mean, this is certainly an interesting time to start because we know there are still a lot of questions about how Twitter is handling content moderation issues. Musk has pledged to make Twitter a haven for free speech. Certainly, the executive departures we saw last week were the latest example of how Twitter has been struggling with questions and controversies about content moderation. So that's one of the questions we'll be keeping in mind as we see the new CEO start, how she'll handle and respond to those issues.
Wall Street Journal Twitter reporter Alexa Course. Alexa, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
In other news, Ukraine has launched its biggest attacks in months on Russian positions within the country as it prepares for a major counteroffensive to retake occupied territory. That's according to Moscow. Russia's defense ministry said it repelled a push by six Ukrainian mechanized battalions and two tank battalions that began yesterday in the southern part of the Donetsk region. Ukraine has said it won't announce the start of its counteroffensive. President Volodymyr Zelensky told the Wall Street Journal last week that Ukrainian forces were ready. Ukraine's deputy defense minister said today that Kyiv was, quote, shifting to offensive operations in some areas. Back in the U.S., lawyers for former President Donald Trump met with officials from the Justice Department today to argue against indicting the former president over his handling of classified documents at his Florida home, Mar-a-Lago. That's according to people familiar with the matter. They say investigators have honed in on evidence, including an audio recording in which Trump acknowledged that he kept a classified Pentagon document about a potential attack on Iran and extensive notes from one of his lawyers about the investigation. The meeting is the latest sign that Special Counsel Jack Smith is wrapping up his investigation into whether Trump mishandled the documents. Trump has denied wrongdoing. The Securities and Exchange Commission has sued Binance, the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange. The agency alleges Binance operated an illegal trading platform in the U.S. and misused customer funds. The SEC's complaint asks a federal judge to freeze the company's assets. The company said it would defend itself against the litigation. Allstate, the fourth largest property insurer in California, has stopped offering new home insurance policies in the state due to wildfire risks that it says have made insuring new homes there too expensive. State Farm has also stopped issuing new policies for homes, condos, and commercial properties in California. While the decisions don't impact existing policyholders, they could deter potential homeowners from buying property in the state. In recent years, wildfires have burned down thousands of homes in California, driving up costs for insurers who pay for rebuilding and repair. And finally, Americans who use apps like Uber, Lyft, and Airbnb are giving out five-star reviews like candy, at least according to one driver who spoke with the Wall Street Journal. As you might expect, they're giving five stars to drivers who provide amenities and great music. But on the flip side, they're also doling them out to drivers with messy or smelly cars. So why the high scores in those scenarios? Part of it is that Americans are riddled with confusion and guilt and afraid that they could potentially hurt someone's livelihood by giving them a bad rating. Our tech reporter, Preetika Rana, says these ratings matter for drivers because their ability to stay on the app depends on them. But it also means the bar for staying on is getting pretty high.
The funny thing is that because everyone is rating each other so highly, the threshold for deactivations is also insanely high. So Lyft drivers who get below a 4.8 out of 5 are asked to work on boosting their score. Now, in school, 4.8 on 5 would be an A+. But in the ratings world, it's a fail. Drivers whose scores dip to 4.6 out of 5 are at the risk of getting deactivated. So that just shows you how bizarre ratings have become.
Overseas, people are slightly more strict about grading each other. Uber drivers and riders in some Asian countries are less apt to give perfect scores. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. And if you want to give a rating that really does matter, please rate and review our show. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.